Hot slime! Remus Venn snapped as the transport scraped along the wall of the pit. Watch my ship! The fit was tighter than Anakin had thought it would be. Still, a moment later, they settled into the steaming water of the underground pool. Anakin dropped the landing ramp, and an instant later, Ikrit and the two Jedi children were on board. Strap in, everyone. Anakin hit the lifts, and back up they started.
Anakin, Tahiri said, I think we may have trouble.
She pointed up through the cockpit. Something dark was eclipsing the light.
Sith spawn. They've moved one of the big freighters over the hole. Continue,
Master Ikrit murmured. Anakin felt a powerful surge in the Force. Anakin throttled up. Banging, sparking, and shaking, they shot up toward the belly of their enemy.
Master Ikrit is pushing the freighter up,
Tahiri said in awe. And indeed, when they emerged, rather than sitting right over the hole, the freighter was 80 meters off the ground. Anakin darted his gaze about. The other ships and people on foot had come in on all sides but one, so he cut toward the hole as a brutal barrage struck them. Anakin took them through the storm, just as two more ships closed in, completing the trap.
Help Master Ikrit, Anakin told the Jedi candidates. Push the freighter up farther.
Master Ikrit is gone, Anakin, Balin said. He jumped out of the hatch.
He what?
There he is,
Tahiri shrieked, pointing ahead of them. There Ikrit was indeed, walking toward the blocking ships, a corvette and a light freighter. As he approached them, they were parted as if by two gigantic hands.
I don't believe it, Anakin said.
But he gunned forward, nevertheless, aimed at the gap the Jedi Master had created for them. Blaster bolts and laser beams sizzled and hissed in the air, but every shot that might have hit either Ikrit or the ship bent away, missing by centimeters, and still the small Jedi strolled sedately along.
He can't keep that up, Anakin said. Tahiri, use the Force. Snag him as we go by.
That was when the first bolt slipped through and struck Master Ikrit. Two more shots hit Ikrit in quick succession, and then fire was pounding their ship again. With a sob of anguish, Anakin jetted the ship through the hole. At the same moment, with an inarticulate growl, Tahiri leapt from the open hatch, lightsaber glowing, and ran toward the downed Master.
No!
Anakin howled. He caught a glimpse of her, Ikrit's body in her arms, dodging back toward him.
Balin, Sana, one of you! He shouted. Get to the laser turret, now!
Anakin spun and fired the jets, leaping above the other ships, strafing them as he went. The ships came up with him. He fought for altitude, all the time aware that Tahiri was farther and farther below him. He could still feel her. She was still alive. Master Ikrit was not. Anakin felt the ancient Jedi's life go, felt it pass through him like a sweet wind.
I am proud of you, Anakin, it seemed to say. Remember, together you are stronger than the sum of your parts. I love you. Goodbye.
Anakin gritted his teeth against another concussion. He couldn't win this. Not here, not now. With a curse that bordered on being a sob, he flipped, slid between two ships that collided an instant later, and punched toward the upper atmosphere. Below him, Tahiri's presence dwindled. The turbo laser in the turret began talking as Sana took control of the gun. Anakin put the ship into a climb, fighting for distance, though every meter he put behind him tore another stitch from his heart. I'll be back, Tahiri, he said. That, I swear, I'll be back. Talon Card was a hostage, but he wasn't supposed to know that. Imsitad probably thought himself clever and subtle for maneuvering Card into joining the search party on the moon's surface, and equally clever to make certain that there were 20 of his own people to Card's 4. Card was quite content to allow him that illusion of shrewdness.
We've already searched here,
Maber Yef, the leader of the Peace Brigade segment of the team, said in his shrill little voice, waving his hand at a long row of vine-smothered ruins.
I'm sure you did, Card replied.
But not with Vornskers. They sense the Force, and especially those creatures that use the Force. They are particularly suited for hunting Jedi. Observe. The beasts had pricked up their ears and were panting eagerly. They darted through a crumbling entranceway.
But we looked in there,
Yef repeated. Do you think you could see them if they didn't want to be seen? Or that you would remember them if you did see them?
Can they really do that?
They can really do that.
Captain Imsatad said you have a way around that.
Card smiled thinly. Indeed, a certain creature from the same planet as the Vornskers. It projects a bubble that repels the Force.
That's what your pretty lady has in the covered cage.
Exactly. My sweet Sleena is as delicate as they are. She understands their needs.
Yeah.
Yef spared Sleena another leer.
Can I see it?
Sunlight harms them, she said, and they are easily agitated. After the hunt, I'll show them to you. Card drew his blaster and nodded to Shada on his right. Most everyone else already had theirs out. After you, Card suggested to Yef.
You're beasts,
Yef told him.
You go ahead.
As you wish. The tunnel took them down through ages of stone. Eventually, it debouched into a large cavern. The Vornskers stood snarling and spitting at the darkness.
Where are they? I don't see anything.
Yef swung his lamp around. No, Card said. Neither do I. He raised his blaster and stunned the Peace Brigader. He managed to nail another one before the return fire came, and by then he was already diving for the rocks. Team members Halm and Person, alert for his signal, were already doing the same. Shada, on the other hand, was a gyroscoping blur in the midst of their enemies. Too bad Yef was already stunned, otherwise he would be learning a whole new appreciation for the delicate lady right now. By his count, it was now 4-15. He heard Halm cry out, and regretfully amended his own forces to 3. A bolt singed across Card's arm, and he stumbled on the uneven floor. I'm getting too old for this, he thought, rolling on his back. And suddenly, a glowing wand of energy appeared above him, cutting complex hieroglyphs in the air. The blaster bolts that had meant to end the glorious career of Talon Card whined off into the cavern. Card blinked up at the man standing over him. Nice to see you, Solasar. What took you so long? Then Card opened up on the Peace Brigaders, climbing to his feet as he did so. Solasar was his cover now, deflecting the fire directed at them with that eerie Jedi certainty. Another lightsaber flashed into existence across the room. That would be Tian. When the Peace Brigaders were down to 3, they fled back up the passageway. You're lucky I didn't cut you down, Solasar said. Bringing those men down here where the children are? Using your Vornskers against us? What if they had attacked the students? Card cocked his head. My pets are very well trained. They attack only on my order. Look, Solasar, I had to find you. I couldn't do it without the interference of those fools, and when I did find you, I had to get rid of them. They thought I had an Isalamiri with me, that your Jedi powers would be blocked. But you didn't bring one. It's an empty cage. That was quite a risk. I told Luke Skywalker I would take his students off of Yavin 4. If keeping my word requires risk, that's acceptable. Solasar nodded. What now? Now I suggest we get out of here before they send reinforcements. Unfortunately, Captain Imsatad had not underestimated Card as badly as he might have. When they reached the surface, the forest was teeming with Peace Brigaders. Perfect, Cam muttered, ducking a blaster bolt. At least before we were hidden. Card glanced casually at his chrono. Solasar, don't you have any faith in me? I think I would cover my ears if I were you. Tian, children, cover your ears. What? Solasar began, but was drowned out. Card grinned as turbo laser fire set the surrounding jungle ablaze. It was good to have a crew he could trust. He stepped from behind cover and, carefully aiming and picking off the few Peace Brigaders who were still paying attention, trotted toward where the wild card was landing. When the landing ramp came down, Cam Solasar and Tion shepherded the children on board as Card and his crew provided cover fire. Treetops snapped as Anakin wrestled with gravity. Ben's complaints had deteriorated to a steady moan. Valen, strapped in the co-pilot's seat, looked very ill. Xana was still firing the turbo laser. From her, Anakin could sense both frustration and anger. Tahiri had been her friend, too. Was still her friend. Tahiri was alive. The transport cut a smoking swath across the tree line for a kilometer before Anakin saw what passed for a clearing. He dropped in, straining the inertial dampeners well beyond their parameters. Then he dumped a torpedo and reversed direction, traveling back toward the treetops on repulsors, hiding in the canopy. The torpedo went, taking 100 square meters of the forest with it. "Come on, you vultures," Anakin muttered. Anakin could make out a Sentinel-class shuttle through the smoke. It seemed to be investigating the clearing below. "Yes, they think we've crashed," Anakin said, punching the engines back on. The shuttle tried to swing around as the transport rose out of the trees, but it was too late. Anakin fired his last proton torpedo, and the Peace Brigade ship became a ball of fire.
"Anakin!"
Xana shrieked. Instinctively, Anakin threw the ship skyward, but not before multiple impacts ripped through the failing transport. Of the ships that had chased him halfway around the moon, only one, an E-Wing, remained. "Xana, you only have to hit it once," Anakin said.
"I can't get a bead,"
she shouted back. "Let me have a shot," Ben demanded. "You'd shoot down your own friends? They're not my friends." Anakin felt no deception coming from Ben, and he made his decision. "Valen, uncuff him and take him to the gun." Anakin dropped low again, trying to buy a few more seconds.
"I'm on it,"
Ben reported. The E-Wing saw its opportunity then, darting in and chewing the transport's engine to shreds. It coughed offline, and in that in-between moment, Ben needled red lines across the sky, stitching through the E-Wing. It spun wildly out of control. Then, the transport was falling, and Anakin hit the repulsors. The sound of tearing metal deafened him. Card was the last to board his ship. "Well, gentle beings," he said as he took his seat on the bridge, "what's the situation?" Hasishi, his Togorian communications officer, shot him a harried look from the sensor station.
"We did some damage to our watchdogs in orbit, and they seem to be retreating. The rest of our fleet should be here in about 2 hours. But Yuuzhan Vong are headed our way. Lots of them. At least 2 warship analogs and a whole lot of smaller ships."
Card cursed inwardly, but tried to keep his face calm. "How long?" he asked.
"No more than an hour, sir."
Card turned to Cam and Tion. "I'm going to have the idiot's array come alongside. I want to get these children we have aboard safe on Coruscant now." "Anakin and the rest are still down there," Solasar snapped. "If you're thinking of leaving them..." Card cut him off with a wave of his hand. "I'm thinking of no such thing. I'm staying until we find the rest," Solasar said.
"I imagined you would. And Tion?"
"The children need one of us."
"Very good. I'll arrange the transfer.
Now, our tactics will have to change. And we need reinforcements. Shada, I want you on the idiot's array. And I want the demise to run with you. Bring back whatever it takes."
"You're crazy if you think I'm leaving you here."
"We'll be fine. You ought to know by now that if there's anything I'm good at, it's surviving. Now go. We have no time to argue about this."
"I'll be back," Shada promised.
Anakin came to with a taste of blood on his tongue. Through the cockpit transparasteel, he could see only crushed vegetation.
"Xana, Valen,
Are you okay?
They're okay, Ramus Venn said from behind Anakin.
Anakin twisted in his seat and found himself confronting the muzzle of a blaster.
He looked up at Venn's cool gray eyes. You'll put that down, Anakin said, pushing with the force.
Sure, Venn replied, with only a slight hesitation.
I'll put it down.
Great. Anakin unfastened himself from the flight harness and took the blaster.
Vaping moths, Venn swore. You Jedi are sorcerers.
Keep it sealed, Anakin warned him. Valen, Sana, we have to find cover outside.
Venn, I'm right behind you, so don't try anything.
On his way out, Anakin picked up the stun cuffs.
Anakin, is Tahiri going to be all right?
Sana asked, tears starting in her eyes.
I can hear her in the Force, he said.
Calling me, he added to himself. He could feel her fear, mixed liberally with anger.
Anakin turned toward Venn, who sat a few meters away, his arms cuffed around a young Masasi tree.
What will they do to her, Venn? Where were you supposed to take the children you kidnapped?
I didn't know our targets were children, and I don't know where we were supposed to take them.
I can make you tell me, Anakin warned. It occurred to him that neither Jason nor Uncle Luke would approve of that sort of threat. At the moment, Anakin didn't care.
Venn fidgeted, but said nothing. Anakin suddenly surged to his feet and stalked toward the Peace Brigader.
Hold it! Wait a second, Jedi! Don't slag my brain! I don't know much, but I can tell you something I overheard. The Yuuzhan Vong were planning to come to this miserable hole already. The Peace Brigade decided to head them off, capture you guys before they arrived, as a present of sorts.
Why do you say these Peace Brigade guys, as if you aren't one of them?
They hired me to pilot, that's all.
Again, Anakin sensed no deceit. What will the Peace Brigade do now that they've botched the job?
They'll probably take your friend back to the temple, try to bluff it out with their one captive. Then they'll probably cut and run. But I don't know them well enough to say for sure.
All right, we need to figure out how to get this ship running again.
Ramus Venn vented a bitter laugh.
We have parts from the ships we shot down, Anakin said evenly. We ought to be able to cobble something together. Besides that, help is on the way, so maybe all we really have to do is hold out for a little while. Valen, Sana, I want you to watch the camp while I go do recon at the other wreck sites. If you hear anything coming from the sky, you both hide and stay hidden. Understand?
Yes, Sana replied.
Valen nodded dutifully.
Good. And ignore everything Venn says. Don't touch his restraints. Don't go near him. I'll be back in a few days at most.
From his vantage point near the top of a Masasi tree, Anakin watched the distant dots buzzing around the crash site. They'd been there for hours, but in the last few minutes they'd been leaving one by one. He felt a constriction in his belly. If he had one of those flyers, he could get back to the temple and find Tahiri.
And do what?
Leave Valen and Sana with Venn and a sky full of flitters? Try to drag them all along in another aerial battle and then a rescue?
No. He couldn't pin all of their hopes on that.
Something beeped and whistled. His hand was already on his lightsaber before he realized the sound was coming from his wrist comm. He was being hailed.
Fiver! Anakin exclaimed.
Pursuit evaded. X-wing badly damaged. Awaiting further instructions.
Fiver, lock on this signal and come straight here. Where are you?
252.6 kilometers from your present position.
Great. How long will it take you to get here?
20 standard hours.
What? Why?
Repulsor lift motivation only. Ship badly damaged.
But you're okay?
Operational.
Good going, Fiver. Get here as soon as you can. We need you.
Affirmative.
Anakin couldn't believe the little droid had really done it, flying the X-Wing alone, a task Fiver wasn't really built for.
Things weren't exactly looking up, Anakin thought, but maybe he could take his eyes off his feet at least. darkness wrapped around Anakin like a cloak and whispered to him like a mother. It promised him a face of Durasteel and a heart of Ferrocrete. It offered him supernovas of power and the unflinching will to use it. Soft laughter began, familiar yet strange. A woman's laughter, throaty and sardonic. It made the hair on his neck prickle up. He turned and saw her. Her hair was gold. One of her eyes was jade and the other obsidian. Her lips were fringed by 100 incisions, and a white scar ran from the top of her forehead to her chin. Armor of a black and gray banded chitinous substance fit close to her body, a very adult, very human body, though the armor was plated and jointed like an insect. Knobs and spurs stuck out from her shoulders and elbows. She smiled at him through those split lips and held up something baton-shaped, which flexed in her grip like a sluggish pupa. Sudden light blazed from one end of it and resolved into a blazing blue blade. Dark side energy crackled around her, calling to him, and he felt a sudden terrible attraction for her, every part of him yearning for her in a way he had never even begun to feel before. She grinned more widely and laughed again. "The last of your kind," the woman said, her voice made whispery by what had been done to her mouth. "The last of my kind." And she raised the blade, and Anakin recognized her. "Tahiri," he shrieked. She paused, as if she might have heard something very far away. Then she came forward, sweeping the weapon down, and Anakin choked on the look in her eye, the mixture of glee and despair, joy and sickness. He awoke, still choking. A strong hand was clamped over his mouth. He squirmed, but the grip on him was sure and strong. He used the force to twist the hand away from his mouth and shove his attacker sprawling, and in the next instant got his feet under him and his lightsaber in hand. In its sudden light, he made out a bearded face, a blaster. He leapt forward.
"Wait, Jedi! I'm a friend."
"Yeah? Why did you attack me?"
"Didn't know. Didn't..."
He wheezed off, his voice sounding strange, as if he rarely used it.
"Name's Coral. I have been a friend to Jedi. I didn't know who you were."
"Coral? My brother and sister knew a Coral. He made them fix his ship at Blaster Point."
"Jason. Jaina,"
the old man said.
"Coral also saved them from the Shadow Academy."
"You were a TIE fighter pilot, stranded here when the Death Star was destroyed. You went off..."
"And came back. I left as an enemy to your brother and sister. I came back their friend."
"What are you doing here?"
"Saw some ships fly over, fighting. Thought I saw one go down, so I followed to see. And here I am."
Coral gestured at the lightsaber.
"Could you put that away, please?"
"Oh, sure."
"Who were you fighting?"
"Peace Brigade."
"Who?"
Coral asked.
How long since you've had news from the outside, Coral?"
"I don't know. Supplies dropped off maybe 2 or 3 years ago."
"Well, this will take some explaining then. A lot of explaining."
"Will it explain the new ships I've seen? The strange ones?"
Anakin felt his chest constrict. "What ships?"
"They look like growths of some kind. Ugly."
"Oh, no," Anakin whispered. Hours later, back at camp, Anakin settled down across from Ben. "I need to talk to you," Anakin said.
"So talk. Hey, who's the old guy?"
"A hermit of sorts. I'm putting him in charge of you."
"What do you mean?" Ben asked suspiciously.
Anakin drew a deep breath and plunged into it.
"Okay, here's the thing, Ben. I need your help."
"Yeah, well, too bad. You've treated me like hot slime. Why shouldn't I return the favor?"
"The Yuuzhan Vong are here."
That got Ben's attention.
"The thing is this. I'm going after my friend back at the temple. I'm going now.
I want you and Coral to get Santa and Balin off of this moon.
What? Have you got some kind of fever?
You still need some parts to finish the repairs on your ship, but Coral knows where you can get them.
And why should I do this again? I keep missing that part.
Because it's your only chance. You think the Yuuzhan Vong are going to hail you as an ally when they find you?
I doubt it very much.
You say you were only in the Peace Brigade for the money. You say you don't really share their cause. Let's say I'm going to take you on your word about that. Get these kids to safety. How do you know I won't just fly straight to the Vong and turn Valen and Santa over to them?
Because Coral will blast a very large hole in you if you try it.
Anakin raised his voice.
Coral, could you come here, please?
The old pilot shuffled over and treated Ben to a thorough once-over, then looked squarely at Anakin.
You sure about this, then? He asked.
I've got to do it, Anakin said. The Force is pulling me to do it.
The Force? Huh. Will the Force get you halfway around the moon in less than a year? Because that's how long it'll take you to walk. You might as well wait until we have the ship fixed.
I don't have to walk, Anakin said. The repulsor lift system in the E-Wing was salvageable. I cobbled together something that will pass for a speeder.
Already?
Yeah, but until you came along, I couldn't really talk myself into going. I couldn't take Valen and Santa, and I couldn't leave them behind. But now I have two signs, he finished to himself. Coral and my dream. Tahiri, grown, wearing Yuuzhan Vong armor and wielding dark side force. I'll leave in the morning. Borsk Felya, chief of state of the New Republic, offered an apologetic expression that looked as false to Luke as it was well practiced.
I'm sorry, he demurred. I can be of no help in this matter, Master Skywalker.
I beg you to reconsider, Chief Felya. Lives are at stake. The Bothan nodded.
I am painfully aware of that, Master Skywalker. However, whereas you are concerned with the lives of a few Jedi, I must consider a great many more. I must consider further that this action would quite effectively end the truce with the Yuuzhan Vong and cost even more lives in renewed warfare.
Chief, these are children we're talking about. They've done nothing, and they don't deserve to suffer for the mistakes of others.
But you would ask me to jeopardize millions, perhaps billions, for those same mistakes? Your mistakes?
That's the most... Jaina Solo exploded.
Quiet, Jaina, Luke said.
But he's twisting...
Child, you have all your mother's fire and none of her common sense. Listen to your master. You've taken up enough of my time.
Luke felt Felia's mind snap down and vacuum seal. The interview was over.
It makes a certain amount of sense from his perspective, Jason said.
Luke and Jaina had returned to the Jedi Master's quarters, and Luke had just finished relating the substance of their talk with the Chief of State to Shada Dukal, Tian, Mara, and Jason.
I do not believe you said that, Jaina snapped. This is Anakin we're talking about. It's the Praxium. Talon Card is out there right now, fighting a holding action for help that will never come. He'll stay there until they pick all of his ships off, one by one. Won't he, Shada?
Yes.
Luke fixed Jaina with his gaze.
I understand your concern, but what good will one more X-Wing do Card or Anakin?
Uncle Luke is right, Jason said. I don't think the weight we could add to the battle would help.
What then? Shada asked. Card can't do it alone.
What if we added a Star Destroyer to the equation? Luke said. Shada looked thoughtful for a moment, then nodded slightly.
If the Yuuzhan Vong don't get more reinforcements, maybe.
Tarek, Mara said. Tarek, Luke agreed.
I thought you said you couldn't find him, Jason asked.
No, but I have some ideas now about where to look. All I need is someone to look for him.
Jaina's nostrils flared. Uncle Luke, you aren't just trying to get us out of the way, are you?
Luke shook his head. How do you plot that course? No. Let me add to that the fact that since Valen is Booster Tarek's grandson, Booster will be more than happy to help.
And Corran Horn is Valen's father. And last I heard, he was with Booster, added Mara.
When you go to find Tarek, I want you to take the candidates with you.
What, in an X-Wing? Jaina asked.
We have Shada's ships, Jason began.
Oh, no, Shada said. They aren't my ships, they're Card's, and he needs them. I'm returning to the Yavin system, and I'm doing it very soon, no matter what you work out here.
Take the Jade Shadow, Mara said. It may be a little cramped with all of the kids, but she'll do the job.
Anakin sped over what might have been the billows and curls of a vast sea of green clouds. But the green clouds were an illusion, a potentially deadly one. They were really treetops, and if he passed through one at this speed, he would shatter the makeshift speeder against them. It was exhilarating to be flying again, so much so that he kept reaching for the throttle to really open her up. But the throttle was already open. The speeder, quite simply, wasn't. He tinkered with it as much as he could, but no amount of jury-rigging could transform a cannibalized E-wing repulsor lift welded to an awkward strutwork chassis into a fleet steed of the winds. Anakin flew day and night, sleeping only in tiny naps, drawing on the Force to replenish himself. He was slipping into the arms of fatigue when he heard an odd noise. Pacing him, perhaps 50 meters away, was something large and dark. Something that did not exist in the Force at all. It wasn't as big as a coral skipper, but not much smaller either. Did they think he hadn't seen them yet? Or were they still trying to figure out what he was? He got his answer a few moments later, when the craft subtly changed course, and their flight paths began to converge. This is no good, Anakin muttered. He turned the lift control down 2/3 and dropped through a small gap in the treetops, stabilizing in the mid-level canopy of the Force. Something crashed through the treetops behind him, and all of the hairs on his neck stood up. What was he facing? A living ship? A beast? He dropped and cut a sharp turn, slipping between two trees. He thought he was evading it pretty well until something hissed past his ear. Not a branch, not anything he could feel in the Force. Desperately, he increased his evasive tactics, spinning and rolling, slipping through the narrowest spaces. Dark things licked past him, hissing in the leaves, and then something caught the speeder in a grip that stopped it dead in the air. Anakin didn't stop, however. With all of the forward momentum that had just been stolen from his craft, he was hurled into the night, a rocket of blood and bone. He tucked and spun, slowing himself with the Force, and dropped onto a branch bigger around than he was. He turned and found himself facing a hole in the night. A thin tendril whipped out from the thing and wrapped around his waist, cinching painfully tight. Anakin snapped on his lightsaber and cut. Incredibly, the strand resisted the first cut. It seemed no thicker than his thumb, though it yielded to the second. Another of the thin strands caught him. He managed to cut it, too. If this kept up, he thought. He saw pretty clearly what he had to do. He hurled himself up and came down on top of the craft. For a brief moment, he felt an odd disorientation, as his inner ear suddenly told him that down was in two different directions, as if he stood on the dividing line between two different gravities. In a flash, he knew what that must mean. Whatever this thing was, it was, like other Yuuzhan Vong craft, propelled by a Dovin Basal, the creatures that somehow generated gravitic anomalies. The craft jerked and spun over. Anakin lost his grip, but he had a fix on the gravity source now. The Yuuzhan Vong and their creatures might not exist in the Force, but gravity did. As he fell, he hurled his lightsaber up, guiding it with the Force. It struck at the heart of the gravitic anomaly, and sparks showered the canopy below. As Anakin fell through the first layer of leaves, he saw his lightsaber rupture into a bright purple flare. Concentrating on the weapon, Anakin glanced off a branch, falling like a rag doll. Trying to focus through the pain, he found the forest floor, pushed against it, until it pushed him back. All of his breath coughed out in a rush, and he folded around his gut, sucking for wind that would not come.
The morning sun found Anakin turning blue and black over much of his body, but still functional. He cautiously climbed from his hiding place in the hollow of a tree and looked around. The Yuuzhan Vong craft was down, perhaps 80 meters away. It looked as if it were grown from the same stuff as the coral skippers. The pilot inside looked quite dead. Anakin's lightsaber lay nearby. When he picked it up and tried to activate it, his fears were confirmed. Nothing happened. "Perfect," he murmured aloud. "No weapons at all. Perfect." He found the remains of his speeder still attached to the cable sneaking from the Yuuzhan Vong craft. It didn't take much of an inspection to tell him that this time he wouldn't be salvaging anything. From here on out, he was walking. Nen Yim watched the Damutek ships settle amongst the alien trees with a giddiness she tried hard to conceal. No reward could come from a display of emotion. A shaper was circumspect. A shaper was analytical. A shaper did not stare in wonder and joy and wave the tendril of her headdress in abandon. So Nen Yim did none of that. But by the gods, she felt like doing it.
"Your first time on a true world, adept?"
Nen Yim arranged the tentacles of her headdress and bowed when she saw it was her new master, Mejan Quad, who addressed her.
"You may turn your eyes on me, adept."
"Yes, Master Mejan."
Mejan Quad was a female nearing the final edge of youth. Her broad, high-cheekboned face bore the ritual forehead scars of her domain, and her right hand was an eight-fingered master's hand.
"And answer my question," she went on.
"Yes, master. I have never before known a world outside of our world ships."
"And what are your impressions?"
Nen Yim looked back down at the dirt beneath her feet.
"It feels so strange, the unimaginable wealth I'm standing on. And the life, different from our own, and varied, and none of it made to serve us."
The Master Shaper narrowed her eyes.
"It is made to serve us," she said quietly. "It is the will of the gods that life serve us. You were taught this."
"Of course, Master,"
Nen Yim said.
"I only meant we have not shaped it yet, but we shall."
"Yes, we shall,"
Mejan Quad agreed.
"And I emphasize we. Do you know why you are an adept, Nen Yim? Do you know why you are here?"
"No, Master."
"Because I saw your work on the Endocrine Cloister in the world ship Banu Kor. Many would have stopped short at the molding of tea, but you went beyond that. You applied the Vul'Agh protocol, though such has never been used in an Endocrine Cloister. I need adepts who are resourceful, who can use the sacred unchanging knowledge in new ways. Do you understand?"
"I believe so, Master,"
Nen Yim answered cautiously. A small lump of fear formed in her throat. Did the Master know? But she couldn't. If she knew that Nen Yim had dabbled in heresy, she would never have promoted her. Unless she herself...
"Come, adept," the master said. "It is time to receive your hand."
"So soon?"
Nen Yim asked.
"Our work begins tomorrow. We have one of the Jedi, you know. Supreme Overlord Shimra himself is watching what we do here most carefully. We will not disappoint him."
Nen Yim stepped from the ceremonial bath into a darkened Ujith. At her touch, it wrapped itself firmly about her, and she felt the tingle as it inserted cilia into her pores. Then she allowed the attendant to escort her into the darkened grotto where the master waited. Both her eagerness and her trepidation had her pulse hammering as she knelt at the mouth of the grotto,
a hole the size of a fist surrounded by a massive bulge of muscle. Without pausing or flinching, she placed her hand through the opening. Teeth slid out of their sheaths, 8 of them, and pricked into her wrist. Sweat started on her brow as she surrendered to the pain, as the teeth, with glacial slowness, sank through tissue, grated into bone, until, finally, the teeth met in the center of her wrist. She felt them click together. She tried to take a long, calming breath to prepare for what was to come next. The mouth suddenly rotated 90 degrees, and then the hand came off with a wet snick. Nen Yim held up the stump of her wrist and stared at it in dull astonishment. She barely noticed the attendant taking her by the shoulders, guiding her toward the dark basin in the center of the grotto.
"I can do it," she whispered.
She knelt by the basin, her head spinning. Dark things moved in the waters, 5-legged things that came to the scent of her blood eagerly. She pushed her gushing stump into the water. She couldn't see the creatures grappling with her wrist. For a horrible moment, she didn't want to. A great flash of light exploded in her head, and for a time, she knew nothing. She awoke, and tears of shame started. Through them, she saw the master standing over her.
"No one has ever endured it without a brief lapse the first time," she said. "There is no shame on this occasion. If you ever receive your master's hand, it will be different, but you will be ready."
Hand. Nen Yim raised it before her. It was still seating itself, a thick greenish secretion marking the line between it and her wrist. It had 4 narrow fingers and a thumb protruding from the thin but flexible carapace that now served as the top of her hand. Thousands of small sensor knobs covered the fingers and palm. The 2 fingers farthest from her thumb ended in small pincers. The finger nearest the thumb had a thin, sharp, retractable claw.
"Rejoice, Nen Yim. You are now truly an adept. You will join me in shaping the Jedi and will bring glory to our domain and the Yuuzhan Vong."
Anakin's hand went to his useless lightsaber, and then fell away. For 3 days, he had been avoiding the Yuuzhan Vong's speeder analogs. He tried to take another step, and found he couldn't. With a sigh, he sank down onto the moss. Just a little rest, and then a shadow fell across him. He looked up to find 2 Yuuzhan Vong warriors looking down at him. A 3rd warrior appeared from the forest behind the first 2. He looked different somehow, mutilated like every other Yuuzhan Vong Anakin had seen, but he was more strikingly grotesque. Unlike the other 2, this one was empty-handed. The first 2 warriors grunted and spat words at the 3rd. Anakin had heard the tone before, when the Yuuzhan Vong spoke of things that they considered abominations. It was a tone of pure contempt. For a moment, the newcomer seemed to cringe beneath this abuse, but then he slashed one of the warriors in the neck with the edge of his gloved hand. The other warrior gave a hoarse cry of outrage, lowered his amphistaff, and thrust at the attacker. The unarmed warrior caught the shaft, leapt high in the air, kicking with both feet and striking the staff wielder in the face. The first warrior down was coming back up, clutching his throat. The unarmed one grabbed him by the hair and drove stiffened fingers deep into his eyes, lifting him from the ground by the sockets. The warrior went rigid, and when the newcomer let him drop, he fell to the forest floor, twitching. The warrior who had been kicked in the face didn't get up. Anakin suspected his neck was broken. The unarmed Yuuzhan Vong was the only one still standing. He squatted next to Anakin and peered at him with eyes like algae-infested pools of water. He looked sick. The Yuuzhan Vong showed their rank by scarification and the sacrifice of body parts, but this one looked like an example of that gone horribly wrong. His face and neck were covered with scabs and open wounds. His scars looked swollen and unhealthy.
Spiky growths that looked like dead or dying implants moldered on his shoulders and elbows. He stank of putrefaction. After observing Anakin for a long moment, the Yuuzhan Vong rose, approached one of the bodies, and dug into its ear. He pulled out what looked like a worm of some sort and fed it into his own ear, or rather, the festering hole that might once have been an ear. He shuddered, and his body spasmed as if in great pain. A thin drool of blood leaked from the orifice. He turned back to Anakin and held out his hand.
I am Vuarapung, Jedi. You will come with me. I will help you.